you can imagine, like, what a men's group would look like. If you got, like, a random sampling of the population, sat 10 American men down in a room, told them to talk about their feelings, first thing is, everyone would stand up and leave. If you made them sit down and talk about their feelings, I can only imagine what might happen.
We're talking about redefining and owning masculinity on this edition of The Gender Knot, the podcast where we untangle the new masculinity and femininity. I'm your host, I'm Nastaran Tavakoli-Farr, but it's okay, you can call me Naz, and I'd like you to join me on this journey of figuring out new gender roles for our modern era.
I have tried to be master of many different domains, like the electronics, the yard.
And one of the girls wanted to do this, like, pink cotton candy-based cocktail, and I don't really want to participate in this, this is just too much estrogen for me.
I literally have to be the best lover she's ever had in her life because our whole interaction to date has been perfection.
We'll be talking about leaning in and leaning back, what a feminine economy looks like, men's groups and women's groups, and if we still need them, what it means to be a man in today's world, emotions in leadership, and whether they help or hinder women. Male feminists, and if and how men can help the cause of feminism in the first place, boys being left behind, and things we miss from traditional gender roles, and much more. But this week's episode is about redefining and owning masculinity. I'm gonna talk to a woman about what role we women can play in this conversation.
How we can help change the conversation around masculinity, or at least make it something that we can discuss of how men feel in the world.
That's Lee Ware. And then I'm going to talk to a man about his experiences with exploring his masculinity. And I'll also get his take on that all-female conversation.
Two women sitting together talking about men's problems. You guys, this could come up with some really, really interesting solutions. I'd love to see how those would fly.
But I did say that. Men.
We'll hear from our guests in a second. But first, here are some of my own experiences with masculinity. I'm fascinated by masculinity. I'm fascinated by the forces that socialize men, forces which many of them then have to conform to, and how these expectations can conflict with what's going on inside them. I'm super interested in the conflict between the good and the bad sides of more stereotypical masculinity. And a lot of these traits are pretty familiar to me, some of them in rather personal ways. I'm really close to my dad, and I was a bit of a tomboy growing up, so I feel that for most of my life I've had a lot of masculine energy in me, more than most other girls. I don't know how much of that was because I was very smart and very ambitious and wanted to be taken very seriously. I wonder if that meant I suppressed anything I deemed girly and instead amped up the hyper-rational and stoic part of me. I'm still figuring that out. I'm especially fascinated by masculinity these days because I've been discovering and embracing more of the feminine within myself. There are all these traits I used to find cringeworthy and kind of lame, but now I see these to be signs of strength and sources of joy. Being in touch with my emotions, being aware of the emotional realm in the first place, nurturing, receiving, just being. God, I'd have scoffed at stuff like that, but I feel like I've actually grown up, and as though I've actually woken up to the fullness of the world and of life. And it's really awesome, and it's really exciting, and I feel really powerful and at peace. And it's made me look at a lot of stereotypical masculinity in new ways, and ways where I contradict myself over and over and over again. I look at a lot of the stereotypes of masculinity, and I see so much of my dysfunctional younger self. What is all this emotional detachment that's actually bullshit? Because a lot of emotionally detached people end up dumping their emotional baggage somewhere else for someone else to deal with, usually a woman. It makes me so angry when so many men think they're in control of their emotions because they suppress and repress and don't deal with it and let it come out some other time through some other form of outburst or aggression and then don't even acknowledge how emotional this behavior is in the first place. And then I feel for them. I get sympathetic because it seems like that's one of the few forms of expression that many societies will allow them to have. Anger, aggression, you know, these kinds of outbursts. I feel for them because I wonder if I'm part of the problem. Yes, I sort of feel guilty for my own role in this. I don't appreciate men dumping their unresolved issues everywhere, but then I also really admire traits like being assertive, being decisive, being direct and to the point, not wavering around. That's so inspiring and it's so attractive. Few things annoy me as much as a man who dilly-dallies. Come on, get it together, make a decision, be a sharp ray of clarity, be a man. But then, so many of us are confused, and surely it's better to be open about that as a way to get more guidance, right? So that's the contradiction. I don't want to be picking up the pieces after an outburst from some male, and yet at the same time, a confused guy just annoys me. That's pretty contradictory of me, I know, and I'm trying to be more aware and to be kinder because of it. In a minute, we're going to talk to Alec Molloy about his journey with masculinity. But first, I had a chat with a woman about redefining masculinity. Lee Ware is from Florida, and she works helping survivors of sexual assault. We caught up during a trip she had to London. She was especially interested in a poster she saw here in the UK from the Mankind Initiative. This is a charity which supports male victims of domestic abuse. Here it goes.
I think it's a difficult thing to talk about because it is quite taboo.
I think there is a bit of talk starting to go around about what it means to be a man and stuff. But
yeah, I think how, as women too, we can do our part. How we can help change the conversation around masculinity, or at least make it something that we can discuss of how men feel in the world and how, as women, we have experienced the other side of that and how we can be really clear about what our experience has been in relation to that.
Do you find men are quite defensive when you try and tell them?
Yes. Yeah.
I tend to have a lot of very one-on-one friendships with men, mm-hmm. and that's because I quite like to delve into people's minds. And I think men only really open up on a one-on-one, maybe even with just women. So whenever people are like, oh yeah, you need men's groups, maybe this is just the guys I know. I'm like, they're not going to talk about any of this stuff around each other, you know?
I'm curious, have you been in a big group of men where they've really opened up? I haven't.
No, it was like very much you talked about things theoretically, mm-hmm. or like you'd intellectualize things. Opening up? No, not really. I have two very good guy friends. They're like both from the same city. They're like a few years apart. Super, super similar people for me. And I once introduced the two of them because I'm like, oh man, they're so going to get on. It's going to be awesome. They're going to like make something crazy great together. And they did not get on when they got together. And then they were both really bro-y with each other. And I was a bit like, wait, I haven't experienced this side of you.
That's not you.
And I was just like, what are these weird jokes you're suddenly like busting out, you know? And then I was like, oh, of course now. So they're not going to have that conversation in front of each other. Maybe I was expecting too much.
This really kind of deep way of relating that you would see in, say, a novel or you'd see in a one-on-one friendship. And then I see all this kind of witty banter in real life. And I'm like, oh, okay. So that's how people relate. When I landed here, the first thing I saw was the Mankind Initiative, which is here and not in the States. They had these three big billboards mm-hmm. that were about the male suicide rate, and that mm-hmm. 76% of suicides are men. The numbers are similar in the States. I was just so struck by how publicly and visibly that conversation was trying to be pushed forward, because it's so important, and that the real need for people to be all people, no matter who they are, to be able to have a space where they can have that kind of a conversation, or a person they can have that conversation with, or just a culture that doesn't frown on that type of a conversation as something that should be, you should be ashamed of having.
But do you feel like you suffer from the fact that maybe a lot of men don't have these conversations?
I think the world suffers. Do you think you suffer personally?
Yeah, sometimes. I feel I've had quite a lot of scenarios with guys just completely losing their stuff on me, in a way that is so incredibly emotionally charged that kind of worries me of what is pent up in there mm-hmm. that has to like be released in such an extreme way. Like, I've never experienced any woman sort of like lose their shit on me the way that I've experienced so many guys do that. Then when you think of, you know, broader society and you look at violence and aggression and stuff, right? This is all like highly emotional behavior.
In the States, there is this real tie-in of protector and provider and unwavering identity of a man being hard as stone in many circles. And especially coming from southeastern United States, that is how men are perceived. And I really, growing up, never saw any alternatives to that. That's what it was if you were a man. Growing up, I started to see these different options of what it meant, different identities as a woman and different sort of archetypes that you might be able to fulfill. You know, some of them that were considered more positive or negative, but at least options. I didn't really feel that I saw that.
For men.
A while ago, I played that tape to Alec Malloy. He's a 20-something white American guy who works in tech. I got his thoughts and experiences with redefining and owning his own masculinity. And we largely discussed this within his own cultural context.
In the talk with Lee, her and I were talking about men's groups.
Yeah, this one was really good.
What did you think of that?
Two women sitting together talking about men's problems. You guys, this could come up with some really, really interesting solutions. I'd love to see how those would fly.
But I did say that.
In your defense, you did say they would not work. So I'll give you that. You can imagine like what a men's group would look like if you got like a random sampling of the population, sat 10 American men down in a room, told them to talk about their feelings. First thing is, everyone would stand up and leave. If you made them sit down and talk about their feelings, I can only imagine what might happen. I don't want to say this is true of all men.
I'm not into talking about personal things in a big group. I think like any meaningful conversation I have is one-on-one. And I see that is more prevalent amongst a lot of men as well. And I don't think there's anything wrong with that. Well, so are we just putting female ways of doing things onto men?
There's certainly something to be said about the need for men to see what they're doing. That a lot of their actions can be harmful to not only themselves, but to women as well. Men's groups, I don't think, are the answer. I went to an all-male high school. It was just a super hyper-masculine environment where teenagers are constantly trying to size each other up. Oh, yeah, like, made it onto the football team, or I did this, or like...
Did you just not make the team, and now you're traumatized?
No, I did not. I would not even try out for the team. Like, I was just so unathletic, so completely inept at sports, just so awkward. I felt very disconnected.
How?
The establishment was saying, like, oh, you gotta be really good at sports, and that's what really matters. There's plenty of people who didn't really follow along with that, who weren't really into sports, but they were academic and they're nerdy, and I wasn't really nerdy, academic nerdy. I just really didn't feel like I fit in, and I had like a couple relationships, if you could even call them that, when I was in high school. They weren't anything that were real or meaningful. I think for a lot of people, high school relationships are that way, but still can be quite formative of how you understand how romantic relationships might be. It wasn't until I got to college, though, when I started realizing what it might be to like have a female experience or begin to understand the female perspective.
What happened?
I had real good relationships, friend relationships with women. As simple as just like hearing stories of like what it's like to be a woman, like on a college campus, going to college parties, knowing that like when your friend is walking down the street in San Francisco, she's going to get catcalled like 5 or 6 times, and actually seeing that with your own eyes.
Yeah.
I think it was a really great discovery. It was difficult to discover.
What was it?
Like the perspective of right. Like my female friends. Right. Like this is how they experience men. But it was so important for me. At the same time, I felt really happy because I felt like I was seeing the world for what it really was for the first time. It wasn't this kind of weird performative relationship that you have. I was able to like have a real human connection, which was amazing. I was not interested in the types of relationships that a lot of my male friends were having in high school because they just seemed so completely threadbare. And I didn't really have a way to describe that at the time because right. That was just the way that things were.
When you say threadbare, what do you mean there? And are you talking about relationships with women or even men amongst themselves?
I mean, both. If you think about how like a high schooler might react to like asking a girl out to like, let's say on a date or like asking her out to prom and she turns him down, there's a really easy answer to why she did that. It's because she's a slut. And that's it. Like, so oh, she's a slut. Like, oh man, right. Such an uninteresting way to respond to that. All men are gonna like, or be like, oh yeah, dude, total slut, and then like nod their heads.
Just move on.
Move on.
So they don't even want to like think of why she might have said no or whatever.
Well, I mean, at the end of the evening, when they're drink 10 beers to
get over the fact,
to put their to bury their sadness. Maybe they'll have a heart-to-heart with their friend and be like, maybe it came on too strong. Maybe it, and hopefully, maybe there's some growth out of that. But
I feel what you're talking about is a very American male trait. It's actually generally a bit of an American trait. I think your society is so focused on everyone must get what they want and you deserve to get what you want, that there's this strange entitlement that's even worse with men. I've had a lot of interactions with American men which have been along the lines of them not getting what they want and absolutely going on a warpath. And this can be like a colleague, it can be an editor, it can be a friend. There's this sense of just expecting that everything is about them.
Yeah.
In a way that I don't see as much with British men or British people in general, because I think it's a bit more of a cynical culture of, oh, well, you don't always get what you want, life sucks. And there can be an advantage to that in that people take these things less personally. If it doesn't go your way, it's more life sucks rather than screw this person. You know, I think this is a bit of a capitalism thing.
I like talking and self-analyzing a lot about gender. It still is really hard to take a hard look at yourself, and even it's really hard to kind of understand what it really means to be a male. What might be stereotypical of the American male?
Right.
Because we're the status quo. It's very difficult to kind of recognize like what the status quo is when you are the status quo.
Yeah.
And everything's just kind of built for you, and that's the way that things are. It's hard for me to respond to that. I think maybe...
Do you feel threatened when I say that? Or do you feel like it's a real diss or something that I've just said?
No, I wouldn't say it's a real diss. I think it's totally fair. I mean, I can think of a lot of instances where I've seen that, and maybe I've also done that as well, but I don't really consider myself hyper-masculine. I don't really have massive bursts of rage.
But this is even... These behaviors I find like... It's just so across the board. And I have a bit of a theory about this. I also wonder how much this is to do with capitalism. What's interesting is that American culture is very masculine because it's all about doing. It's doing culture. You show yourself through your actions. You're constantly proving yourself. And in some ways, there's a real beauty to that. There's something very meritocratic about that. But on the other hand, and this is something I see in Americans in general and more in American men, there's this sense of constantly feeling like you have to be on top of everything because the moment something is uncertain or it's out of your control, it feels almost like someone's identity is about to slip away. This reaction of like, oh my God, someone disagrees with me, or this situation is getting out of my control, or I'm not on top of it. And then, you know, it's almost like a house of cards falling, you know. I wonder, it must be exhausting to be on the receiving end of constantly scanning, constantly making sure that like you're on top of your shit, you know.
Yeah.
I don't know, maybe I'm reading it wrong, but that's really the vibe I get.
I don't spend my time with
you're
with
the representative
men like that.
Man.
I know, but you gotta like get some like proper American bros on your show to talk about that.
I told someone I was doing this recording with you and he was like, since when is Alec Molloy like the representative of the country's masculinity?
Who? Like, it's so obviously true. Because, like, I mean, look at me. You gotta tell me.
This is why you're agreeing to do this talk, right? If you're a proper American man.
Who told you?
If you're a proper American man, you'd be like, I'm not doing this talk.
Yeah, no, I'm sitting down and having a men's group with you right now.
I was kind of talking about the perils of doing culture. But in some ways, I've always been quite a fan of doing culture. I remember as a teenager, growing up in the UK, being a girl, being an immigrant, there was really a sense that your place is set for you, especially because the UK is very classist and stuff.
Yeah.
I always found male circles, strangely, a lot more meritocratic and somewhere where I felt a lot more at home because it seemed like you could show your worth through action and through doing and proving yourself, which is a very, very American thing as well.
Absolutely.
And I remember like being at a girls' school and it was a really nice girls' school as well. I don't want to slag it off. But that whole kind of feeling culture and stuff like that did not sit well with me at all. Whereas male circles, there was a real beauty to like you can prove yourself. And so sometimes I wonder, do we sort of talk shit about men too much? That's kind of a really powerful, cool thing that exists in male culture, I think.
Yeah, well, I mean, of course, there can be a lot of good sides to masculinity. And really,
we bash
really,
it a lot, though. That's the thing.
Yeah, we totally bash it a lot. And I think that there certainly are parts of that need to be bashed and just talked about more in general. One of them, which unfortunately is a word that can go both ways, the patriarchy. To be a patriarch can be a really beautiful thing. And it's something that I totally aspire to do in my relationship and in the family that I want to build. Like, I aspire to be a patriarch. And I think that that's a good thing to want.
How do you define patriarch?
patriarch is someone who is the head of the family. They've got a plan. They're assertive, in my conception of it. They're going to be fair, and they're going to be teaching, and they're going to try and hold on to and express certain traditions and ideas that they then kind of form a vision for a family around. You have children who are learning things that are important and are good, and they're going out and they're chopping down wood and learn how to camp. They're also learning how to be good members of society. They're learning how to be ethical, and that all kind of stems from the patriarch. I'm not saying that when I build my family, like, I want to be the only one. Obviously, I want to be doing that with a partner.
You see this as being the role of the father, to instill those values.
It's not the role just of the father. It's the role of the parent. There's certain subtleties that apply to the patriarch, in the same way that there's subtleties that apply to the matriarch.
Have you ever felt that it's not okay to want those things?
In many different situations, you'll hear that there's so many things wrong about masculinity, and it's really hard to separate these things out and kind of, like, really be able to establish what is good about it and what is bad about it. My kind of conception of what a patriarch is formed on a lot of older, more kind of traditional ideals that I don't necessarily agree with. And a lot of the ideas of what it means to be a patriarch are a lot of things that I would probably actually come to expect from a partner. Around the house, my girlfriend and I will very often find ourselves comically slipping into traditional gender roles.
Uh-huh.
I'll be in the bathroom fixing the sink, and Sandy will come in and say, "Oh, do you want dinner?" And she'll cook me dinner while I fix the plumbing. And we will, like, we'll make sure that we clock it, acknowledge it, laugh our faces off for, like, 5 minutes about it. I grew up with a father who every single weekend I was out with him in the yard, mowing the lawn, digging a ditch, building bridges or tree houses.
Nice.
And I hated it. I totally hated it.
I think it's great.
Now I look back and I'm so thankful. It taught me a lot of really great virtues and values, but it was mostly just I wanted to go inside and play video games. Doing that all the time, it's going to kind of give you the idea of, like, okay, when you grow up and you're a man, you are going to know how to do a lot of things. Totally aspire to do that. I have tried to be master of many different domains, like the electronics, the yard,
the plumbing.
Like, these are all domains that I am skilled in and take pride in owning. There certainly is this kind of, like, growing up and realizing that, okay, maybe there are parts of, like, masculinity that I really enjoy owning. I also really enjoy cooking, and I also like talking about my feelings, but it's fun and almost kind of funny to discover that there are a lot of things that you grew up being told were the right thing to do, and they're the ideals, and to feel that you were out of place originally and then later discover that actually there's something there and you actually really enjoy mowing the lawn or you really enjoy fixing the plumbing.
You just heard Lee Ware and Alec Molloy on this, the first episode of The Gender Knot. Now, on to next week's episode. You've heard of leaning in, but how about leaning back?
I'm surrounded with tons of amazing women. They're leaning the crap in. And they burn out.
We'll be speaking to one of the editors and authors of the book, The Lean Back Perspective. Leaning back is the counterbalance to leaning in. It's about looking at the bigger picture and trusting in doing what's right for you. And we'll hear from a woman about her experiences with leaning in and also more generally in the workplace.
I've, let's say, worked in a career and I've started at the bottom of it. I've worked my way up from the bottom of it. At the status I'm at now, there are as many men as there are women. So I feel pretty equal. But when I look back, I don't remember any men in those junior positions.
We'd love for you to follow the Facebook page where you can be updated on the podcast and also take part in any discussions. Head over to the Gender Knot podcast. And don't forget, it's not spelt with a K. I'd also love to hear your thoughts about this episode or anything else. You can also get in touch with me via email. The address is thegenderknot@gmail.com. That's thegenderknot@gmail.com. I'm also super keen to hear any thoughts you have about topics which are worth untangling, or if you'd like to be in an upcoming episode yourself. You can also send your thoughts to me via Twitter. I'm at ntavakolifar. That's my full name. That's at ntavakolifar. You can also subscribe to this podcast in a variety of ways. Head over to audioboom.com/channel/the-gender-not. And you can also subscribe on iTunes or your favorite podcast player. And do leave a review on iTunes if you can. Okay, until next week, take care, and I'll speak to you then. Bye.